seachtain an Indo-Ascaliger.
Táim I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach an seo gur féidir é a chur in uaig ceart lena bhaintir féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfach ara i gcuirna meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam a gnám go raibh orthcháir in reachtam. Iadach sé tarann go raibh an orthcháir san i lis dúthail agus go mina fnacht gáir a chlig sár ducha sin éair. Ná ní bhíon ann tar d'oraach sé sin. Vin Marav.
Shachtan. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.
Remember, you can stay up to date on the latest news with the Irish Independent WhatsApp channel.
This is an Irish Independent podcast.
Hello and you're welcome to The Big Tech Show with me, Adrian Weckler. Now, how do you grow a small company, a tech company? Is it worth doing an MBA at any point? And is Ireland making a mistake by concentrating so heavily on foreign tech multinationals? Well, Professor Joe Haslam is the Executive Director of the Owner's Scale-Up Programme at IE Business School in Madrid, which is the fourth-ranked business school for entrepreneurship in the world. He was also on the founding team of Marrakesh, a Dublin-based e-procurement company that raised over $75 million in venture capital and scaled to over 250 people. And he's the co-founder and chairman of Hot Hotels. Joe, you're very welcome to the podcast.
Great to be here, Adrian.
Joe, I mentioned that the IE Business School is the fourth-ranked college. What are the top three?
Well, they're all American, you know, and I think we're more most, you know, I guess Stanford is always going to have, and then MIT, and then Babson would be the third one in Boston. So
what are you doing wrong that they're ahead of you?
I wonder about that. I think that Americans have the money, you know, That's the thing that Spain, it's just America, you know, we can criticize them in many things, but when they see something, they double down on it like crazy and make it as big as possible. And with that comes results. But what's interesting is that Babson is the least known. Everyone knows Stanford, everyone knows MIT, but Babson, because they specialize in entrepreneurship. And it's quite incredible when people talk about business schools, many of the criticisms that business schools get are because they're, you know, finance and strategy and things like that. But business schools that are dedicated specifically to entrepreneurship are very different institutions.
Now, we'll get into some of the company stuff in a minute, but you grew up in Cork, right?
Yeah, I was born in Limerick and we were there till I was 16. So, and then we moved to Cork. So it's a sort of like, I tell Limerick people I'm from Limerick and I tell Cork people I'm from Cork. And then that way you get on with everyone.
So how did you end up in Madrid?
I we set up Marrakesh, this company in Dublin, which, you know, went back a long time. And as part of that process, you know, as you mentioned, we raised $75 million and scaled to 250 people. There was two things that I got out of that, actually three things. The first thing was we found ourselves around a lot of tables as part of the fundraising, and people would discuss, you know, they go around a table and they'd all say where they got their MBA. And I sort of said, I don't really have one. That was sort of the first thing. The second thing was that we were given a lot of money, but it struck me that there was no playbook for scaling. You know, everyone talked about how to start, and everyone talked about how to run a large company, but nobody really talked about like fast-growing companies, how fast-growing companies are different. And the third thing was that we had operations in Argentina and Mexico. So I started to sort of see how business was done in Mexico, maybe you call it the Latin way. And that gelled in much more nicely with the time I'd spent in Silicon Valley, where, you know, someone could call you and then a week later they'd pretend they've never met you. In Mexico and Argentina, you spend a lot of time building relationships. And I thought that was more Irish. It's said everywhere I go in Spain, you know, that the Irish are the Mediterraneans of the North and all of that. So I kind of, you know, felt that, you know, they often say like Irishness is completely wasted in Ireland, you know, so like, well, if you go somewhere else, I mean, we get away with absolute murder. You know, other people are just shocked the way that people sort of instantly gravitate to us.
But you, because that old, very cynical adage of those who can do, those who can't teach, you had actually done the business and the startup. And then, albeit with your very logical explanation of your parents having been in academia, you then followed them into that.
But I think in a business school, it definitely does help with your credibility. It does help a lot that you can talk about. I mean, I've been on the co-founding team of six companies at this stage. So that gives you credibility. I think the thing about, you know, those who can do and those who can teach, you know, it's one of those sort of things that people say. But anyone who's ever scaled a company, even the Colm Lyon, who you might know here, yeah, behind Fire and all of yeah. that, mm-hmm. He did an interview, and of course he was beside, he had lived next door to John Teeling, who's probably my, you know, in terms of the Irish entrepreneurs I'm most impressed with, it's probably him. And John, so
that's interesting. It's not a tech founder. It's
because he was also an academic and also an entrepreneur. But Colm talked about how, you know, so he had a lot of advice. But then when Enterprise Ireland put together a program for Irish entrepreneurs to go to Sanford, and he said it just kind of put structure on things and gave him confidence to take decisions and, you know, made him simplify what he was doing and things like that.
So that's interesting. I wanted to ask about the idea of an MBA, because it does seem to be something that will, you know, rocket fuel your career, your prospects. What is it about an MBA? Is it always worth trying to do an MBA? You know, should more people be considering it?
Yeah, well, an MBA in a top school is definitely worth it. An MBA...
Why? Why?
Because of your access to the other people.
Okay, so is that really a key thing, though, your access to the other people as opposed to the actual... for want of a better word, learnings in the actual degree.
It's like football, you know, when you play with better people, you become a better player yourself. And I think there is an element of confidence to it when you start to realize, oh, I'm just as good as everyone else, even though I come from a small country. I think also studies about entrepreneurs have high correlation. I mean, entrepreneurship, there's no one kind, but the one, as most of what we can say, is that the ability to persuade people is the thing that most of all makes you an entrepreneur. And that's really all you're doing, is persuading people in one way or another to buy stuff, to come work with you, to give you money, you know, to wait for another week.
And is that an art, or is that something innate, or is that something that can be honed?
You can get better at it. It helps if you have some natural ability, but everyone can get better. I think, again, studies start to say that, that this thing about are entrepreneurs born or made, people like to tell a story, you know, but it's the same way you read an autobiography of someone like Michael Dell, and it's like, oh, shucks, you know, I just worked hard and looked after my customers. And it's not really true at all. You know, there was a lot more behind his success.
I've met Michael Dell a couple of times, and you can see, even talking to a lowly journalist like me, you can absolutely see some of what makes him an interesting person to talk to. You'll stay with for 30 seconds more, 60 seconds more, and you'll listen to his pitch. And it's a combination with Michael Dell of a certain amount of charm, an interest in you, and you can see a determination to be present in the moment with you. And I'm sure that's just, I'm only scratching the surface there of what makes him an entrepreneur.
Michael's book, if you compare like Shoe Dog, the book about Phil Knight, you know.
Phil Knight.
You know, that's such a different book, and that really brings you under the covers. Whereas Michael's biography is, you know, very much kind of like, you know, how can...
Do you know what? There's probably a book to be done about a number of companies in Ireland for whom that's true. I mean, to be fair to them, the Web Summit, a similar kind of a story, really. A lot of young fellas and young ones in the Web Summit who are encouraged to ring up, you know, one of the managing directors of Goldman Sachs, and they do it, and then they leave that company, and they end up having, you know, pretty successful careers.
What Paddy has done is there's a generation of people who've gone on to set up really interesting companies who initially got their start with Paddy, and then as you say, builds confidence. You know, that's the thing. Like, once you start to think like, I can do this, you know, and that's actually, you know, when governments ask about how to foment, you know, entrepreneurship, and they ask about accelerators and incubators and stuff, what generally often happens is that great companies come out of somewhere like the Web Summit or Iona Technologies, going back even
God,
further.
The number of companies out of Iona. What do you think about Ireland's strategy in general? We've had a policy, it's been now a national policy for the last 35 years, 40 years maybe, of encouraging foreign multinationals. And you could make a very strong argument in favour of the success that has brought, certainly in terms of employment, certainly in terms of corporate taxation. And then on the other hand, I've also, I'm aware of arguments that would suggest that that's fine, but actually we're missing the thing that could actually make us a high skills country in the long term. Where do you stand on all that?
Yeah, I mean, I get asked about it a lot. There's a couple of things you might say. The first thing is that a lot of the things that we win, you know, like big wins or something, there's actually really nobody seriously competing with us for those things, you know? I mean, you know, many countries do look at Ireland and it's like, why are you favouring foreigners, I guess, to use the word, over your own people? That seems to be kind of quite extraordinary.
Sorry, when you say that, do you mean, American companies?
Yeah.
So the Googles, the Metas, the Apples, the Microsofts, all of those
big
companies.
Listen, it's great in terms of, but first of all, I put on the green jersey when required. You know, the Irish, we tolerate ambiguity very well. So I will be here on critical of IDA Enterprise Ireland. But when they call me and they say, can we get an intro to somebody? I always do it straight away and I would never not do it.
What is the opportunity foregone? Let's say, I wouldn't even say Meta or Google, but let's say we're all delighted with the thousands of people that Meta and Google and Salesforce and Microsoft and all the rest are employing, say in Dublin, for example. I could choose Cork and a few companies down there as well. Where is the opportunity foregone there in terms of employment, in terms of resources?
We talk about Google and Meta the way, you know, the British talk about the Second World War. You know, it's that kind of
our, like, saviors or it's
that sort of like our finest moment, you know, kind of stuff. Like, and it's kind of over. And I mean, I'm not saying that the tech stuff is over, you know, but there's two issues. One is that what's called crowding out, which is this notion that if you are an entrepreneur and you're trying to hire good programmers or whatever, they will obviously go for the free food in Google and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's a real thing. The second thing is that, and Stephen Kinsella in UL has done research on this, there's no spin-off effect, you know? That is to do sometimes with the type of work that's done in these companies. They don't often have product and things like that. Now, the research would say that there should be a spin-off effect, but for whatever reason, it isn't really happening.
So that's the name in, say, web services. We'll call that loosely.
Yeah.
I can see exactly what you're saying and it makes perfect sense. And on the other hand, I'm also wondering whether if we didn't have those tech companies and if we didn't have people who are going to work as project managers or, you know, engineering leads or whatever, would we still be stuck in Ireland with a country of solicitors and bank managers and kind of the dreary sort of stuff that when I was leaving school was still kind of, your career guidance teacher would say, now you be sensible and go and get a job as an accountant.
Well, the thing is that we look at the wrong countries. You know, this is all, we should be looking at Denmark and the Netherlands, you know, as being the countries. You know, the Netherlands, I have ASML, Booking.com, Adyen, you know, all these kind of fantastic companies that they build. Denmark has, of course, you know, Novo Nordisk could become the biggest company in the world, you know, and an Echo and all this. But they are countries of similar sizes to Ireland.
But they've such a different history, don't they? I mean, they've a much more self-assured, confident in their own culture. And I say that in the loosest terms, because we do have a very confident culture. And, you know, you mentioned colonialism. I mean, Denmark and the Netherlands were both basically colonial countries.
Yeah.
And so they've got these centuries of kind of folk memory of being the masters of their own domain.
Yeah.
And we just don't have that. Or is that just an excuse? Am I just rationalizing here?
Yeah, I mean, the other thing, of course, is that most, up to 90% of business is family business. And in Ireland, the rates of family business are really low, you know. And actually, a lot of the famous family businesses are Protestant businesses. You know, if you go back, it's frightening to look 100 years ago at independence, who owned, what were the big, how many of them are still there, you know. And so... Ireland suffers from the lack of family businesses. We suffer from the lack of like, I mean, you could literally, you know, go past kind of like Ryanair, Primark, Smith's Toys, you know, a couple of those kind of, like, you're struggling once you go back 20 to find people who said, you know, we're just as good as everyone.
Yeah, no, that's a fair point. And now when I talk to tech firms, and whether particularly scale-ups actually, when you boil it down, what they look for when asked what makes things better are things like more incentives, lower taxes, reform of capital structures, things like that. And sometimes I am left thinking, is that not just a pretty old-fashioned capitalist ask, you know?
Yeah.
It doesn't really get to the culture bit, the ingenuity bit, even the education bit.
So first of all, I'm totally on board with the Scale Ireland people. You know, every year at budget time, you know, Brian Caulfield and Martina, they put in a submission to put them into the Finance Act, and it doesn't get there. Bits of it get there.
Bits of it, yeah.
But, you know, not all of it. So, you know, so here's the thing. If governments say, like governments, if you go back, like the Telesis report, the Culleton report, like it's report after report about industrial strategy. But the problem is that it comes up with saying like that, you know, putting all your bet into like, you know, multinationals and that kind of stuff that don't have spin-off effects is not good industrial policy. It's not building an industrial base. So their reports kind of don't come up with what they want to hear, you know?
Yeah, I'm wondering what it is that we might do as an alternative or as a supplementary measure even. Have you thought about
Here's
that?
Here's the thing. So it's interesting that we kind of have it the wrong way around, which is to say that we put our supports into helping people start. And then the feeling is like once you get them kind of over the hump to a certain level, then they'll be good enough to use the market to get money and sell product and stuff like that. That's actually the wrong way around. So what you should do is kind of let people use their animal spirits to get going in the first place. And then once they get going, then you support them in the scale up, in the money, in the partnerships and all of that. And that's really, that's kind of the American way.
I'm sure it's inevitable there'll be a degree of that, you know. So in other words, to take it into an Enterprise Ireland context then, that they should maybe just spread more of it around or have a bigger budget?
Yeah,
maybe?
Like Enterprise Ireland are incredibly worried about accountability. And that's actually a good thing in some ways, but they are
wasting money. You mean?
Yeah, they're worried about like you know everyone gets a bit and you know that kind of stuff. That they're worried about perception and worried about those kind of like taking the problem with people like Dennis O'Brien and Paddy and stuff like that is that like they're kind of gobby entrepreneur troublemaking kind of types. Mm-hmm. And Enterprise Ireland and I've worked it's said a lot about Enterprise Ireland. They've some exceptional individuals, which is true. You know, they kind of like giving money to safe people, and those kind of people. And the safe people aren't the people who have that kind of run through walls determination, which is what it takes.
So I think what you're saying is that you're better off just taking a chance, not worrying quite as much about traditional criteria. And then like if someone comes to you with an idea, have a higher propensity just to go with it and see what happens on the understanding that it might actually fall flat, but that's just part of the price to picking out the jewels.
Very much part of the thing. But so you're going to have to, you know, say something here that's controversial, like in among a certain crowd. But the debate comes down to what's called picking winners or not picking winners, right? And so, you know, in an Anglo-Saxon world, of which I'm no longer have 20 years in Spain, and I would go to a lot of events in Spanish. In an Anglo-Saxon world, picking winners is frowned on. But in a non-Anglo-Saxon world, picking winners is, you know, but of course. Like, so you have, you know, that's Korea's development policy. That's France's development policy. That's Spain's development policy. You know, whereas in Ireland, you know, it's sort of Boston and Berlin stuff, you know, which is to say that we have this in the same way that the products we create or the people we compare themselves to are both UK and US. You know, the way which our attitude towards, you know, public services and fixing housing and all that kind of stuff. You know, if you talk to development economists again, they will say that, like, you know, if you want to make a city popular, it's not about a big spectacular building. It's about repair. The flower pots, you know, like that's the stuff that matters.
Yeah, and I'm just wondering what we can do. I mean, do you think that we're too soft? Do you think we're not going out of our way you know, in as forthright a way to pick the winners, for example? And if so, how on earth would
We don't do, you know, Anne Enright has this famous, the novelist has this thing about, you know, Ireland tells itself, tells a lot of stories about itself, none of which are actually true. And there's a lot of stuff about, like, how many entrepreneurs really reach out to other people and say, God, I loved your podcast. Well done. Great. Keep going. You know, hey, I heard some great stuff about you. You know, in Ireland, we're all, you know, Deck Ryan, who's, you know, one of the Ryans, you know, he talks about loneliness in Ireland being a huge thing, which is a sort of a surprise, you know. And I saw it as well, like the JA had this initiative during the pandemic of kind of reaching out to people who weren't able to go down to the club like they usually were and stuff like that. So that's the thing about Ireland that we like, I have to say, and Pat Phelan, whose name you know as well, and me, we're very much agreed at this, that there isn't so much the pulling people down. Like, I think every Irish person I've ever asked for help has always helped me. And you kind of, you only notice it when you ask a Spanish person who doesn't help you. Like, what, you know, like I'll send an email and they'll say, hey, I don't know, but ask Colm, you know, ask whatever. In Spain, you'll just get a, you know, no, nada, gracias, you know. And it's a sort of like, it's a thing, you know, because the family ties are strong. So what we have to do is get the whole mentoring thing. There's an organization called Endeavour Ireland, for instance, a guy called Rory Guinan, who actually I'm meeting after this. Endeavour is a fantastic organization. You know, they do two things. First of all, they don't let the people that get in are all people of substance who have genuinely built companies. They're not people who tell a good story but never made a profit.
This is what The Edge is
was involved in it. You know, like they're like U2 is even a really interesting story and continues to be and is an inspiration to a lot of people. And you know, again, we slag them off a bit here, but
they're quite a lot of wealth from those big companies. And I suppose it's a philosophical discussion as well, as if those billions go to pay for schools and, you know, social welfare and all that sort of stuff, what is the degree to which,
because it puts us off if you can get money that way. I mean, that's kind of like, you can think of that money like an oil, you can think of it like that way, like, and people have used that analogy that our tax, corporation tax benefits are like Norway's oil. But, you know, of course, Norway's oil put into a sovereign wealth fund, you know, track the S&P 500, and, you know, rather than used it for like tax cuts or something like that. But there's a huge thing that it puts off, the fact that we can get money from that puts off the fact that we have to kind of go to these, like there's all these books like The Misfits, The Outsiders, you know, that these, like there's even Why Nations Fail, you know, that book, and that talks about the fact that a lot of elites, you know, keep like the kings the way they are, that certain kinds of people continue to do well, and they don't like the fact that like some guy from black tie can now own a beautiful house. Is it Aldersbury or Shrewsbury Road? You know, that's kind of like, you know, these kind of like new money coming in and doing stuff, you know, that's not an Irish characteristic, you know, that's a kind of a characteristic.
Oh yeah, there'd be novels. Jane Austen was writing about that couple of hundred years ago. While I have you here, a couple of other things. One of the courses that you teach is, I believe, is called the $1 trillion Challenge.
Yeah.
And we now have 6 or 7 $1 trillion companies in tech anyway. Microsoft, Apple, Meta just joined the club, Google, Nvidia, Tesla was there, it's fallen off. Amazon will be there. Do you think we're going to see more?
And you know, I interviewed Sam Altman when he was on his world tour, and Sam told me that he expects there to be like one person, you know, certainly $1 billion companies. $1 trillion companies is another thing. What those companies tell us is about exponentiality, you know, this whole notion that, and again, the studies that do on why American companies scale up is that they leverage technology better than we do. You know, irony of ironies, actually, Jim Power, who's another name, like wrote this report about why small firms, he did actually a lot of work, and I wish his report would be widely read, you know, about how you see these SMEs and they're, you know, still using faxes. They don't invest in technology. They're using Excel or back of the envelope kind of stuff. And American companies tend to, because there's more of a hustle culture and there's more of a, they tend to like invest in accounting systems, invest in reporting. Like if you can get good management information running a company, company is quite easy. The problem is if you've no information on which to make a decision. So that's why you start to see these companies and, you know, Italy, Spain, Portugal, Ireland, Greece, why we don't have more scale-up companies is we don't invest in exponential technology. Mm. You know, we don't invest. When I had a hotel booking company, obviously we had an algorithm that was like selling hotels in Brazil when I was sleeping. But in general, we don't really understand, like there's just amazing things technology can do. And it's got much more easier to use in terms of like the cloud and those. I sound like a software salesman now, you know.
But, I take your point. And a kind of a sideways comment to that at the moment. I've been reporting quite a bit over the last few weeks about kind of a mini round of job cuts and layoffs in the tech sector. Countless companies now, over 80,000 tech jobs, quite a few here in Ireland as well, kind of some of them under the radar. And this is happening at a time when tech companies are seeing booming revenues as well. I think Meta, for example, cut about a third of its workforce last year here.
Yeah.
And they just had an absolute blowout set of earnings. We're seeing DocuSign are about to let some people go, and they say they're probably going to exceed their revenue guidance for the year. I wonder what's going on here. There seems to be two sides to this story.
Yeah, I mean, there are many countries in Europe that you can't do that. You can't, if you're profitable to a certain amount, you just can't fire people, you know. But, you know, some people would say that's what holds Europe back. So I don't know, like that's where competition comes into it. Like, you know, the should billionaires exist thing. Like there's a huge argument about the fact that, okay, Facebook allow you SMEs to sell ads, but they also have stifled innovation, you know, by buying companies and things like that. Like, it's not that billionaires shouldn't exist, but that competition should be such that they don't exist.
Well, the richest man in the world is European.
Yeah.
Bernard Arnault.
Yeah. That's an amazing stat. Like, and I study him as one. I mean, just as I study Spotify and all of the European scale-ups, like they all have something really interesting to do. But of course, Bernard is torture that he doesn't have Chanel, which is the brand he wants. I mean, my sisters will be roaring, laughing at the fact that I'm sitting in Madrid talking to people about fashion.
So his 260 billion are just, you know.
All of these people, Mancio Ortega, who's head of Inditex, who's 86, is also kind of tortured by lots of stuff. Like these kind of guys.
So they're stinking rich, but they're unhappy, Joe. That's what you're saying.
Well, you know, there's more of it. But it's the tragic irony is that the things that made you successful, the intensity, the focus, all of those things are also the things that very often mean you can't enjoy it. And Mancio, some of the things he has in his life and Bernard, he worries about succession. He worries about his kids. You know, he worries about lots of these kind of things.
We all have those worries. It's just I don't have hundreds of billions of euro to comfort me.
But that's the point, which is to say that if his kids go bad, they have the resources to go really bad, you know?
Right. Yeah, well, that's a fair point. I'd love to chat about more with Professor Joe Haslam. It's been a pleasure having you on, the Executive Director of the Owner Scale-Up Program at IU Business School in Madrid, the fourth-ranked business school for entrepreneurship in the world and one of the top 10 business schools in the world. Rory Bones was on sound and JJ Clark produced this episode. I'm Adrian Weckler. You've been listening to The Big Tech Show and we'll talk to you again soon.
Seachtain, an Indo as Gaeilge.
Time I mon iarachtaí a dhéanamh teacht ar a chorp, agus súlagam amach an seo, gur féidir é a chur in uaigh ceart lena bhaintear féin.
Scíltaí, fios, tuairimí.
Tá sé dochreite nach bhféadfadh ara i gcuir na meáin an cheist sin a eicáil.
Bhí an talam ag an am gribh orthchar an reachtam. Iadach sé tarrin gribhan ar chórstan i lis dúha agus gimine fnacht gór a clig sár ducha sin eachar. Nau ni vin aon dar darach sa sin. Vin marav.
Seachtain. Find us on all the usual podcast platforms.